Have you ever met one of those people who just can't be stopped? It's like they're unstoppable.
Yeah, I have.
Me too.
What's their mystique?
Nothing stops these people.
Don't stop.
Welcome to Mission Unstoppable with Coach Frankie Picasso. You're about to meet some of the most amazing people. They've accomplished their goals despite insurmountable odds. They beat adversity, physical hardship, and traumatic events, and emerge triumphantly. They're people just like you and me, and they're winners. Are you unstoppable? Here's Frankie to show you how.
Hello there, and welcome to Mission Unstoppable. How are you today? We're having a little few issues again, but weather and whatever is plaguing us, but we're going to get rid of all that bad mojo and we're back. So today we are going on a new Mission Unstoppable. The first stop, Cancun, Mexico, a place where the sun shines, the tropical drinks flow, and sometimes the sharks bite. Today you're going to meet a woman who was brutally, savagely attacked by a bull shark, not once, but twice, which would account for the massive amounts of blood flowing freely from her gaping wounds. She suffered 60% blood loss, leaving her literally hanging on to life by a very slim thread and a few guardian angels. We will also meet the man who was handpicked to write and capture the official story of her ordeal. Nicole Moore is a young Canadian mom, a wife, and a nurse whose celebratory trip to Mexico with friends turned into a nightmare of horrific proportions. And today you will learn about Nicole's extraordinary courage in the face of untold terror, her stubborn will to not only survive, but to keep moving forward, and her remarkable positivity that she has never stopped projecting out to her family, friends, doctors, and even those she's never met, those who reached out to her through cyberspace. And I say this not lightly, all while suffering with the most exquisite pain of intricate nerve damage, loss of limb, and the uncertainty of the outcome of her future. Also with us is Peter Jennings. He has spent a lifetime in corporate communications in Toronto. He ran a PR agency handling marketing, advertising, branding for clients like McDonald's, Procter & Gamble, and Coca-Cola. He's been writing for over 40 years, both fiction and nonfiction, and he now lives in cottage country on a beautiful Lake Rousseau in the Muskokas, among the rich and famous, where he hosts a TV series called Be My Guest. Peter also goes out into the world under the alias PJ, who is his singer persona, specializing in interpreting the great American songbook standards, those songs that have stood the test of time. Peter is a member of the Writers Union of Canada and Muskoka Authors Association. Welcome, Peter and Nicole.
Hi, Frankie. Thank you so much for having us. What an honor.
Oh,
hey,
I am
Frankie.
Indeed,
thank you. I can't believe what you just said about me. I don't even recognize myself, but thank you.
Me neither, Peter. Me neither.
I have to ask, though. Peter, you're on Lake Rousseau. Are you living next to Goldie and Kurt Russell?
Well, I think Goldie and Kurt have moved on, actually, Frankie. They were on the lake, and I think they pulled up stakes. And we have lots of other celebrities and hockey stars and that sort of thing, but we try and play that down. I try and live a pretty quiet existence away from that noise.
Okay. Nicole, how did you meet Peter? How was he chosen to be the one to write your story?
Oh, it's because he was so brilliant.
Oh.
Peter, actually.
Thank you, Nick.
I'm gonna pass this one to Peter because he tells the story greatly.
Okay.
Well, thank you, Nicole. Actually, Nicole was doing a presentation at a Provost Club in Alliston, Ontario, and a friend of mine happened to attend, and she was absolutely blown away by Nicole's story and her inspirational positivism. And so my friend Sharon went up to Nicole afterwards and said, "You got to write a book about this." And Nicole said, "Well, you know what? You're not the first person to suggest that, but I read, you know, I'm not a writer. I know nothing about publishing. I happen to have dyslexia, which would make it all a little bit awkward anyway." Mm-hmm. But my always redoubtable friend Sharon, who will never take no for an answer, said, "I got a friend who's an author, and I think the two of you would hit it off really well. May I have him contact you?" And, hey, 3 years later, we have Shark Assault, an amazing story of survival.
There you go. Right. Wow. Nikhil, help me set the scene pre-accident. You were working as an RN at the local hospital in Orangeville where you live. You were married to the love of your life, Jason. Your very handsome husband, I should say, police officer. That's and you have two beautiful girls, Tia and Ella. And yes. You're very close to your father, Alberto. So yes. What was life like for you?
Living the dream. I had a fantastic, normal life, albeit a bit adventurous. I'm not a girl to say no to many things. So I was into scuba diving, skydiving, rock climbing, volleyball, anything and everything that I could do, I would do. Just living life to the fullest, Frankie.
Wow. Sounds great. So how did it come to pass that you found yourself on your way to Mexico in January 2011?
I work out with a particular fitness group, and we've become pretty close over the years. And it was our leader, the leader of the fitness class, the teacher. It was her 50th birthday coming up, and she wanted to get away. And so as a group, we decided to go away to celebrate her 50th. It was nine girls and one guy.
Nine girls and one guy.
Yeah.
That's funny. And the one guy, he was a pilot for Air Canada, wasn't he?
He was, yeah, and he handled all that estrogen very, very well, I have to say.
So you find yourself in Mexico, the drinks are flowing, you guys are having fun, are you exercising on the beach, you're playing around, your husband and your children stayed home. So this was really like your first vacation away from the family, I would imagine.
No, I'm too adventurous for that.
Good for you.
I travel as often as I can, either with my family or without, depending on what the opportunity was. But this was one of the first ones away with a group of friends.
Right. Okay. So tell us what happened. Give us the details of that fateful day.
So it was about halfway through the trip on a Wednesday, and the girls decided to go shopping that day. And I'm not much of a shopper, so I decided to stay behind. The one guy, Ken, drove the girls into town. He rented a car and drove the girls into town. So I was more or less by myself on the beach playing beach volleyball. I cut out of the game a few minutes early because I had a scuba diving plan tripped. I had a scuba diving trip planned that afternoon. So I quit the game of beach volleyball a couple minutes early, went into the water to go rinse off so that I could go and get changed for the scuba diving jaunt. I walked into the water relatively alone with not many other people around me and just started shaking off the sand, rinsing it off as all of us do, only waist mm-hmm. deep in water, just using my hands to brush my arms, brush my legs off. And off in the distance to my right were two guys on jet skis that were yelling at me. And they're rip-roaring around, and I figure that they're a bunch of people having fun, and I couldn't figure out, why are you yelling at me? There's all this space. No one else is around. I'm not in your way. But they seemed pretty persistent, and I put up my hand to acknowledge them because I realized something was obviously wrong, but I had no idea what. Put my hand up and said, okay, and turned around and started to walk back into shore. As I walked back into shore, the first thing that I felt was a bump underneath the water, and then just the sinking feeling in the pit of your stomach. I'm sure as all your listeners can can understand, any time a fish brushes against you in the water or grass or a weed, you kind of get the willies. Well, this was the exact feeling. Please let this have been a little kid that I didn't see or a snorkeler underwater or something. But unfortunately for me, that wasn't the case. And within seconds later, I sustained my first shark bite.
And, you know, I read your book, and in the book you say you didn't feel any pain. How unusual is that?
Not very unusual. The body, as a nurse, of course, I absolutely admire the human body, but that fight or flight response just kicks in. And rather than, you know, me or my brain not making me recall that pain, it put me into a survival mode instead.
Mm-hmm. So the first, he came and he bit your leg first?
My leg. It actually, which I'll learn later, ripped off clean, two quadriceps and two hamstrings to my femur bone, exposing everything. I didn't see the damage because it happened too quick.
Sure.
I never saw the shark coming. I never saw a fin under the water. I just saw the ocean start to turn bright, bright red with my blood. And I would love to say that I'm a wonderful mother and wife and that my first thoughts were of my kids and my husband. But the first thought was, sharks like blood. I need to get out of this water. Even though I had not seen it, in my mind's mind, I knew that it was a shark that had attacked.
Nicole, I'm going to stop you there. We're going to come back and hear about the second attack on you in just a few minutes because we do have to go to a commercial break. But let me say that you are going to want to stay where you are and come back and listen to this incredible story of survival. Don't go anywhere. We're coming right back. And we're back. We have Nicole Moore and Peter Jennings is with us, and we were just talking about the first attack on Nicole in the ocean in Cancun, Mexico, in 2011, January. So, Nicole, you were bumped from behind. He took a massive bite out of your thigh, the hamstrings and the quadriceps gone, down to the femur, which had to be excruciating, as I know, and now he's coming back around for a second attempt.
Yes, I like to joke quite often that I tasted so good, he decided to come back for more.
Great sense of humor.
Circled around, yeah, the shark after devouring my leg, came back and swallowed my left arm. It had swallowed my left arm entirely in its jaws, its eyes just face to face with me, literally inches from my nose. Was thrashing, trying to take me down, because I'm in shallow water once again, and so the shark is attached to my arm, and I'm pulling up to try to stay afloat, and so half of its body is out of the water, and it's just thrashing, trying to pull me back into the depths.
Now, how big is he? Like 6 feet or something?
Peter?
Attacked Nicole was a bull shark. Frankie, there are over 400 types of sharks within the species, and the bull shark is acknowledged by most experts as being the nastiest, the most aggressive.
Right.
They tend to be anywhere from 6, 7, 8 feet long, although some of them have been seen at up to 11 or 12 feet. And so this was probably the 6 to 7 foot beast weighing somewhere between 300 and 400 pounds.
With a massive head and jaw.
Yeah, and
double
about
razor
150 serrated, really, really sharp teeth.
Oh, my gosh. Okay, yeah. Nicole, he's out of the water. Your whole arm's in his mouth. And you did what?
I punched in its nose. I don't know where it came from, where the idea came from, but I just reared up my good arm, my right arm, and hit it right on its nose.
And that's exactly what you're supposed to do, too, isn't it?
And I'm thinking that part of that came from my scuba diving training, where if the shark comes at you, it's eyes, nose, gills. And that's what I did. And fortunately for me, it opened up and it let go. As you said, I don't recall feeling any pain, but I was absolutely terrified in that water. I didn't know if it was going to come back. I didn't know where it went. I'm screaming to try to get out of the water, but no one is coming into the water to get me. There are people watching, but
I can't believe
that. And I'm trying to get out, but because of the damage that's been done to my leg,
I can't imagine your leg works.
To get anywhere. It didn't work very well. I was still standing, but it didn't work very well, I guess.
Wow.
Yeah.
And so how did you get out of the water?
The guys on the jet skis that were trying to warn me off in the distance, and Peter can tell you later about, you know, why this actual attack happened, but those guys eventually were able to get close enough to me to grab my arm, grab my hand, and pull me to shore.
Now, in your case, being a nurse, you know, sometimes it's good to have knowledge and sometimes it's not. And you knew you had massive blood loss. You knew that you were really could die at any moment. And you knew that care was critical and people were standing there watching you. And now you start to direct your care because, you know, nobody knows it better than you.
it was kind of silly in hindsight, I have to say that. But given all of this on the beach, when they finally pulled me up and no one's doing anything, they're standing around in total shock at what they're seeing. I thought, oh yeah, I'll put my nursing hat on. Let's take a look and see what everyone is looking at. So I sat up and tried to take stock of everything. And then I realized the damage and immediately felt queasy and laid back down on the beach. And yes, as you said, I asked for help. I told people you need to help me and they started helping. And, at certain points I was telling people you need to tourniquet my arm and there's a whole story of survival on that beach.
But it's unbelievable.
Frankie, if I may, what was important as well, and Nicole was aware of this, it was important to keep her awake.
Yes.
Because she was dealing with so much pain, so much trauma, so much fear, and at one point there was just kind of a white light that came over her, and she just wanted to shut her eyes and go to sleep, and had she done so, that would have been the final adios.
Right. And because of all the blood loss, you know, it's difficult to breathe, to get, you know, any air. And of course, you're accelerated because of the adrenaline. So it's double-edged sword going on here.
Mm.
And I knew that, as you said, being a nurse and having the knowledge could make or break you. And in this case, fortunately for me, it made me. I realized what was going on. I realized I was hypovolemic. I had lost so much blood in my system that my body couldn't sustain it, and so I couldn't breathe. I knew that my heart rate was increasing and increasing its demand, which it just didn't have. So I made a very conscious nursing effort to try to stay calm, try to keep my heart rate under control, try to keep my breathing as controlled as I could, and then tell the people around me to keep talking to me, keep me awake.
So there was a gentleman on the beach with these massive hands that gave, you know, compression to your thigh to help stop the bleeding. And two nurses came they were OBs, I guess, obstetrical nurses, but they thought that they could help, and they came to help you and held your hand, I guess, and kept you awake. And then finally, did somebody think, oh, gee, maybe we'll call an ambulance?
I think they called the ambulance almost right away. The problem was just getting it. And anyone that's been on Cancun Beach, right, like this is right in the main Hotel Arizona. It's a massive white powdery beach.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a lot of traffic, one road in, one road out kind of thing. So it took a while for paramedics to get there. And in fact, it took so long that the manager of the hotel who had responded actually called a second unit, called a second time and said, send another truck from another direction. Just get one here as fast as you can.
Peter, I'm sure that you're as outraged as I was when you heard the story of Nicole getting to the hospital. And they're going, well, what about payment? And they're going, do you see this woman laying here? Her leg is chomped off. Her arm is, you know, hanging by a thread. She's about to die. And you're worried about money.
Yeah, it was pretty crazy, Frankie. Now, Nicole, being a nurse, she will forever thank the hospital in Cancun for saving her life. And mm-hmm. Hey, I'm right along with them. On the other hand, I would encourage your listeners to go to hospiten.com. It's an organization out of Spain. They have a number of hospitals in Europe and also throughout the Caribbean and Mexico. And if you go on their website, you'd swear you're on the Mayo Clinic. They say, we've got the best people, the best surgeons, the best equipment, the best techniques. And yet, when Nicole arrived, they immediately wanted $750 to pay for the ambulance. And then a guy came out of the operating theater. And understand, Nicole is fighting for her life.
Right. She's got
literally
like
within minutes of death.
Yeah.
And this guy comes out and says, we need $20,000 before we operate. Not only is that, certainly in this country, illegal, it's unethical.
Yeah.
And the other thing that challenges my respect for this organization is, and again, they saved her life, but 5 days later when Nicole touched down in Canada and was taken right to Sunnybrook Hospital in Toronto, the principal surgeon opened up the bandages on her arm and leg and salt water and sand poured out. They had not changed these bandages in 5 days.
Not changed, not cleaned the wound.
Yeah.
Nothing.
So that kind of stretches the imagination, I must say.
Wow, that's just incredible. And Nicole, like, your bravery is like beyond. Just absolutely amazing.
Thank you. Coming from you, Frankie, that means a lot.
Oh, I don't know why.
Oh, because everything you've had to go through, too. You are a remarkable woman as well, so thank you for that.
Well, thank you.
I have to tell both you ladies, I very much feel today like the thorn between two roses. I mean, you're both amazing, you're unstoppable, you're both winners, and I'm just a guy who writes, so I shouldn't even be on the show.
Yeah, you should. So silly. But, I felt for you because you went to Sunnybrook and, you know, my alma mater.
Yeah.
And I thought, oh, yeah, good. And then you were on the air mattress. I'm like, oh, I was too. You know? But we get ahead of ourselves. So you arrived into Canada, and somebody had arranged for your doctor at Sunnybrook to take your case because, gosh, it was complicated and where else could you go, really, you know?
It was. When we were in Mexico, it was a fight to try to get back home to Canada. They just kept, my insurance company kept telling me there weren't any beds available, and I knew that that just was not acceptable.
Sure.
I knew that that wasn't the case, given, you know, my training. And we called everyone that would listen to try to get a bed, and inevitably it was through one of our connections where we were able to get a doctor-to-doctor consult and get a team at Sunnybrook Hospital willing to accept me. And in fact, I already had a bed with my name reserved on it. And as Peter said, then on the fifth day, I flew back from Cancun to Canada and arrived fairly late in the evening in the middle of a massive Canadian snowstorm. Gotta love it. I wish I could care less. I was so happy to be home. I didn't care at all about the snowstorm. And was just elated that I was home and so grateful to be back on Canadian soil and putting my trust that now I'm going to get the care that I actually needed, because at this point I knew I wasn't getting good care, and thinking everything was okay until my surgical team arrived and into my room. And that's when they took apart those dressings, which was the first time that I had actually seen what was beneath, and to see all of this pus and gross stuff come out of this wound was so wrong. And they rushed me off to the she meaning my surgeon, Dr. Laura Snell at Sunnybrook Hospital, was mortified at what she saw and cleared me, or sent me what we would say, or what the television would say, is a stat to the OR.
Right.
And that was my first inkling that maybe I'm not out of the woods. Maybe I'm not as good as I think.
Her team,
and
their
frankly,
eyes must have bugged out of their head. Like, they just must have like, oh my God, what are we going to do here?
Yeah.
There's one other thing as well, Frankie. When, as Nicole said, you know, she tasted so good, the shark came back for a second bite. But in fact, she didn't taste that good, because after she had been taken away in the ambulance, the hotel manager was standing on the beach. Nothing like this had ever happened to him. He was standing with his head of security. They looked down in the water, and literally, here is the piece of Nicole's thigh the shark had eaten floating. He had spat it out.
Oh,
it's a 15-inch section of her thigh. So the manager of the hotel called for a bag and ice. They put this tissue into the bag and ice, sent it to the hospital immediately. And Dr. Laura Snell told me that when faced with something like that, to reapply that skin segment to the wound, it's microsurgery. It's probably at least a 10-hour operation. You're attaching tiny little blood vessels and whatnot.
Right.
Well, all these people did in the hospital was they just sutured it on.
Oh,
and when Nicole arrived 5 days later back in Toronto, not only...
I have to stop you, Peter. We're going to commercial.
Okay.
We're going to hear the rest
of
this story.
Well, let's go.
We're going to pay some bills. We're going to come right back, though.
You bet.
Well, we're back, and we're back with two people. One who wrote the amazing book, Shark Assault, An Amazing Story of Survival, Peter Jennings, and Nicole Moore, who lived it. Peter, you were just talking about the surgery in Mexico, how, you know, putting everything back together, all the little microsurgery and the plastic surgery that needs to go on to fit all these nerve endings and tendons and things back together. And you were saying they...
Well, frankly, they didn't do that.
Right.
When this 15-inch section of Nicole's thigh arrived in the bag of ice, they simply sutured it on. They stitched it on without doing any of that microsurgery. The result of that is when she arrived in Toronto, there was a black piece of skin with holes in it that was literally disintegrating. And again, I mention this only because this Mayo Clinic-like image they try
right.
to project, I'm sorry, it's just not there for me.
The $20,000 hotel.
Yeah. A nice hotel, but...
Nicole, were you septic at this point then, when you got to Toronto?
Yes.
Okay.
I was very septic. I was very ill. They thought that I had the flesh-eating, same flesh-eating bacteria on my arm, and that's why she was so concerned. And I was thinking I was out of the woods, and I wasn't. And after that initial surgery, that surgery she rushed me off for, Dr. Laura Snell woke me up the next morning by the time they finished the operation, and said, "I don't know how you're alive, much less awake and talking. You are so sick. But had you arrived 24 to 48 hours later, you would be dead for sure."
Wow.
I was that sick, and I had no idea I was that sick.
Sometimes and Frankie, talk about an unstoppable lady, Dr. Laura Snell, who I interviewed extensively. She looks like she's about 18.
She's
very cute. But she's got, you know, awards and commendations and designations from here to Milwaukee and back. She's quite something and really an impressive lady.
You know, Nicole, there's some people who would say you're so lucky to be alive and other people who would say, oh my gosh, like, is she?
Yeah, am I lucky because she was attacked by a shark? She didn't get the proper treatment in Mexico.
Right.
I hear that all the time, and I actually open up my speech with that, my motivational speaking with that is, you know, how many people here think I'm unlucky, mm-hmm. and how many people think I'm lucky? Because it does come down to perspective, and I consider myself a very lucky person. I was meant to be here.
Mm-hmm. I agree you were. And, you know, you still have a family, a beautiful family. You still have you're still working as a nurse at the same hospital in a different capacity, but you're still there. You still have a full life ahead of you.
I do. I say that no matter what, if it costs me the price of an arm, then that's the price I'm willing to pay because I can still love and be loved, and that's all that matters.
How is your leg today?
It's okay. I mean, I'm still missing two quadriceps, two hamstrings, obviously. I mean, I've had several surgeries to reconstruct it. And it's looking better contour wise. Pain, I mean, functionability. When Peter first met me, I wasn't moving that well and I wasn't able to do stairs, but I can do stairs and I can walk even in heels, Frankie. You know how important that is for some of us. And people wouldn't even know it to look at me. They would just think that I was an amputee. Wow. I don't think that we got to that part there. And that my arm, I never did lose my arm at the seam. Mm-hmm. They tried to save it for weeks after, but after 5 weeks, they had to end up amputating above my elbow. So aside from the amputation, people wouldn't even recognize something was wrong.
I want to go back to the hospital for a minute because I think it's important that people understand. You had how many surgeries? 8 surgeries?
Something like 8 or 9 surgeries.
You had
in
to have
hospital.
Skin expanded in your stomach to cover your leg.
That was after, for the year
you had
after we tried.
Unsuccessful
expanding.
Leg surgery and was expected to go to an amputation surgery almost a day later after some disappointment. What you suffered, and I mean, you did suffer. I mean, let's face it, you suffered greatly. You might not have shown it to everybody, but I know.
I suffered.
I remember being in the hospital and turning from my pelvis, I think it was, and seeing like a blue-white light. And I thought, that's the color of pain.
Mm-hmm.
That's the color of pain. Did you feel something like that?
That is a great way of putting it. And it's so true. The pain gets so much that it does. It almost does blind you and you don't know what to do about it or how to cope with it. But you just do it. You never know what you have inside of you until you're forced to face something horrific.
Mm-hmm.
And you can get through as much as you wonder if you can get through.
You know, it's interesting. You were talking about all the, roommates that you had. Cause I used to count roommates too, you know, oh, they're gone.
Yeah.
Oh, there's another one leaving. No, I'm still stuck here. Exactly. Peter, you said off air that Nicole changed your life. She really inspired you.
Yeah, she is indeed one of the most inspirational people I've ever met in my life, probably the most inspirational person I've ever met. And I've met a lot of people, Frankie, I have to tell you, in my business and personal career. Nicole has inspired me to the point where, you know, we all have a blue day every now and then, but
sure.
If I'm feeling down in the dumps, I immediately think of Nicole and say, hey, what would she be doing here? And I just pick myself up, dust myself off, and get on with life, you know?
Mm-hmm.
She's changed me, she's changed my outlook, she and I have become friends through this exercise, and we have a friendly disagreement I should share with you because she thinks she's just a normal girl making her way through life and she can get through things and so can everybody else. And I understand that message. But I do think she's a little bit more extraordinary than just being normal. And in fact, a friend of mine has said, if Nicole is a new normal, there are millions of us out here who are screwed.
That's a good one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I I have to pipe up here because, you know, yes, as Peter said, and that it is a friendly dispute. We do agree to disagree on this one. I'm very flattered that so many people think that I am inspirational. I just don't want people to put me up on too high of a pedestal because, as I mentioned before, I was just living an average life, just like so many other people out there. And I was forced to face something, and I got through it. And if I can get through it, so can everybody else. And that is my message mm-hmm. that I'd like to portray to people, that life can be pretty crappy, and we can be put through some pretty rough things. But you can face it. You will get through it. And more often than not, you get through it a better person than before, which I generally feel I am a better person now.
Mm-hmm. And Frankie, I should just add to that, that's one of the reasons I very much wanted to write Nicole's story, because I believe that. I have a very strong belief in that kind of thing myself. And if people can read this book and walk away with that message, that's great.
You know, I think that's that in some, you know, respects, that's what coaching is. Coaching is, you know, changing perspective. And when you're up there, you're a coach, Nicole. You're inspiring people and changing their perspective, because so many people go, oh, I could never do that. But they don't know. They have no inkling of what they could or could not do because they've never been tested. Mm-hmm. Never been tested. You know, I do know that you went to, you went from Sunnybrook, which was a trauma hospital, to St. John's, which is a rehab hospital. Now, your experience was so different from mine because I loved St. John's. You know, for me, it was like 10 people to get me to a bathroom. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. You're going to make me feel like a human being. Where, you know, the trauma, they were just so busy for me. Like, you had a different experience, but, you know, they didn't care. They're just going to keep you alive and send you on your way. So and of course the food, like I had my first bit of green when I got to St. John's. And I'm like, oh, a salad? Oh my God, how fantastic is this? I know that you were emaciated when you left the hospital. Like, didn't you go down to like 88 pounds or something crazy?
Yeah, something like 90 pounds. I mean, I haven't weighed that. You guys can't see me. Your listeners can't see me, but I'm a very athletic person. I'm generally 130, and that's my good healthy weight. And 90, I haven't weighed that since I was about 12 years old. So yes, I was emaciated. I was pretty thin. And I got to St. John's, and don't get me wrong, I don't want to disrespect, they are a fantastic, incredible facility. We're very fortunate to have rehab hospitals like that. It's just, I wanted to go home. And that was my stepping stone to go home, and I needed to walk as fast as I could to get out of there.
I think part of the challenge, too, Frankie, was that nobody had really forewarned Nicole that she'd be going to St. John's. She assumed she was getting ready to head home. Right. And kind of at the 11th hour, they say, oh, no, you've got another week or two to spend. She's going, what? And then she immediately, upon arrival at St. John's, meets a doctor who she's never met who wants to take her off all the pain meds she's on.
Oh, my God.
And she's facing huge, huge pain, and there's no way that she can go off that. So it probably was not the best start.
And yeah, I can understand that. And the withdrawals from the pain medication is horrific. People don't even understand that. And, like, I remember being at St. John's, and they were pushing sleeping pills. And I kept going, no, I don't want any of those. And they go, no, you need them. I go, no, I don't. I don't need them. And then they finally push them, and then you get home, you have to get off of them. And it's like, oh, my God, like, what did you do to me?
Yeah.
It's horrible.
I never had the issue with sleeping pills. I guess I was on too much narcotics to to worry about that. So I was okay with the sleeping pills. But yes, you and I both, I guess, Frankie, and especially me in my career and my choice in nursing, I have huge appreciation for people that are withdrawing. Quite often in the healthcare profession, it's very easy to just dismiss the people and their symptoms that are withdrawing. Mm-hmm. But now I know it's a physiological thing. It's not a fun thing to go through.
It's very difficult to, you know, to feel somebody else's pain. It really is. Like, how are you now? Are you still have chronic pain? I imagine you do. Yeah.
I'll have it for the rest of my life. All the nerve pain and the nerve damage. I still have the phantom limb sensation, which is not as bad, but I have, from the trauma of battling with the shark to my left arm, I have a torn tricep nerve or nerve damage, And any innervation of that nerve, whether it be me stimulating the muscle myself or flight or driving or walking, it causes nerve pain. Same with my legs. They're totally rewired all wrong from all the multiple surgeries and scar tissue. So there's nerve pain there. But
you have a pain team looking after you still?
No, I haven't since I left Sunnybrook.
Oh, wow.
So, yeah. But I have to say my pain is fine. I'm off all narcotics. So, you know, I was off all, withdrew from all those narcotics within the first couple of months intentionally because I wanted to. And it's manageable. I manage with ultrasound, with acupuncture, with other modalities, with, you know, any type of meditation, anything that's meaningful for me. To help and I deal with it. It's okay. It doesn't put me in a bad mood. I'm a happy person. I'm a very, very happy person. And yeah, I wake with pain, but I tend to focus on the, what doesn't
I'm going to stop you there. We're going to go to commercial.
Okay.
Sorry.
Okay.
We're going to go to commercial. We're going to come back and talk about the happy place that you go to, to manage your pain because it's, wow, it's very difficult and it's very wearing.
Yeah.
Don't go anywhere. We're going to come back with Nicole Moore and Peter Jennings, author of Shark Assault, An Amazing Story of Survival. And it is, isn't it? And we're back. We're back with Nicole Moore and Peter Jennings, and we're talking about Shark Assault. And just before we left, Nicole was telling us about how she manages her pain without narcotics and going to her happy places. And we'll let her finish off with that. And then Peter is going to tell us about sharks. Because if you're interested in swimming in the ocean, you might want to know about shark assaults and things like that. Nicole?
Yes. So I was saying that I'm off all narcotics and I manage my chronic pain by trying to focus on my happy spot, as you put it, which is yoga or meditation for me. Then the things that don't hurt and the things that bring me joy, such as my children or the things that I can do, I focus on what I can do rather than what I can't. And that seems to make me happy. Seems
nice.
To work.
Peter.
Yes.
So I know that first I want to just say that Nicole, in her courage, you did go back to the spot where you were attacked, into the ocean where you were attacked and face the demon, so to speak. Like, unbelievable.
Yeah. Thank you. Yeah, I did, because I guess it's important for your readers.
My listeners.
There's all my work with
you.
Yeah,
I know.
With your listeners to know about me is that I've never suffered any post-traumatic stress syndrome, not even a single nightmare about this ordeal. I've been very, very lucky, especially considering how bad the attack was. And I don't know why, I'm just lucky enough to be that way. And so I thought this is too good to be true. And so I had to go back to the exact spot of the attack and completely expecting my glass floor to fall out, but it didn't. I jumped right into that water and it was exhilarating, nerve wracking, yes, but exhilarating.
Wow.
And shortly after I brought my kids back and my husband back and they've been back in the water every year since with me so that we can continue to enjoy our beautiful, beautiful oceans.
And not only that, you're fighting now to save the sharks. Like, okay, guys, she's attacked by a shark. She's saving them because you watched the documentary, right?
Yeah, I watched a lot of documentaries, but more so because so many people kept approaching me to advocate on behalf of killing sharks. And I thought, I can't do this. And I decided that if I have every reason to hate sharks, but I don't. If other people can see that, if I can use my voice to show people that I don't, that maybe they'll change their perspective as well. So
right.
I choose to use my voice on behalf of sharks and shark conservation.
Yay. Okay, Peter, tell us, what did you learn about sharks and what do we need to know?
Well, sure. Certainly one of the messages, I mean, we've talked about the Nicole's inspiration. pardon me, we've talked about her commitment to trying to save the sharks and swimming in the ocean. I also am an ocean swimmer, and even after having gone through all this research, I continue to swim in the ocean. And that's a message we want people to understand. Don't not swim in the ocean because of this. The fact is, shark attacks are incredibly rare. You are more likely statistically to be struck by a bolt of lightning than you are to be attacked by a shark. You're more likely to win the lottery than be attacked by a shark. More people die taking selfies every year than die from shark attacks.
Really?
So it's pretty crazy. Now, that being said, in the past week, there have been two people that were killed in Australia as a result of shark attacks. Is there a reason for this? Well, the first was a young man by the name of Ben Guerin. Ben was surfing, and Frankie, I have to tell you that sharks are sight disadvantaged. So when a shark looks up and sees a surfboard, a white surfboard, it goes, ah, that could be a seal or a walrus. I'll go up and have a chomp and see if I like it. Often with a surfboard, obviously, they end up with a mouthful of fiberglass. In the case of Ben Guerin, I think his leg was in the way. The shark took his leg, and sadly, 3 days later, he lost his life. Doreen Collier was the second lady. Interestingly, she was a nurse. She was diving at a popular dive spot in Perth, Australia, and we have no idea why she was attacked. People are saying it was an 18-foot great white shark. But I think the experts that I talked to when I wrote the book, I did a lot of research, and they helped me understand that sharks are just like humans, not always predictable. And just as we have irrational shooters that kill kids in schools, and they're certainly not predictable, well, similarly with a shark. Sharks do not like eating humans. They like fish, turtles, seals, and when they suddenly turn on a human, something's gone wrong. We can't predict it.
I read something about wearing jewelry, that it's like little fish, you know, shiny things that attract.
Absolutely. What it is, again, it comes back to the shark being sight disadvantaged. If you wear a bright bathing suit, if you wear flashy jewelry or whatever, that will attract the shark's eyesight. And they'll go, oh, let's go over and see what's there. Mm-hmm. And the result is, you know, they could take a chomp out of you. So you want to avoid that if you're swimming.
And you need a good right hook.
And you need a good right hook like Nicole had, absolutely. Yeah. There's not a hope in hell, by the way, I ever would have done that, I must tell you.
I think I would have just screamed. You know.
Yeah, me too.
You're so brave, my dear. Unbelievable. Unbelievable. And I think, you know, like when you look at the people who are plagued, let's say, with these unbelievable traumas, you know, a lot of the people who've been on Mission Unstoppable have overcome some crazy stuff. And you think, okay, at the time, maybe you said, well, there has to be a reason for this. You know, you don't go through this for nothing. And, you know, is it just to inspire other people? I mean, just, that's not like, you know, that's a huge thing. But, you know, what about me? Does it inspire, you know, what about you, Nicole? You know, you're going through this, you're living with pain every day. Inspiring people is great, but can you think of, you know, why else would you go through this? Why you? Because you could? Because you're strong and courageous and, you know, brave and...
I guess. Maybe. I tend not to ask myself, you know, why me? Mm-hmm. I don't think that there's going to be an answer to that. So why dwell on it? I honestly do believe, though, that if we don't go through challenges in life, then we don't learn to appreciate life. And many of us face challenges in different ways. And this was just a big trauma for myself and for you, Frankie. And we came out of it with a different perspective, but it could be something else for other people. But as long as it's a challenge that you face, that's what builds character. It's what builds strength. It's what determines, you know, who you are. So instead of, you know, one of the things I posted, it's not, don't ask yourself, why me? Mm-hmm. You ask yourself, why not me?
That's what I say, yeah. But you know what I think? I think with your notoriety, more so than just inspiring people, I really do think that it's going to be, you're going to save the sharks. You're going to save the ocean. And you're going to put people's attention on how important the ocean is, you know, to this planet.
So. I've been given an opportunity to have a story to use to draw people's mm-hmm. attention. Do you know how many people, Frankie, are afraid of going to the water because of sharks? Do you know how many people say, right,
yeah,
Peter?
My daughter.
Oh, my Lord, that's my worst nightmare.
Yeah.
I know. So, but, my daughter-in-law got to the Dominican, and in the first minute of arriving, she had a huge man-of-war on her back. No, and she was afraid of going in the ocean, and everybody's like, oh, no, it's okay, it's okay. Then something horrible happens to you, right?
Yeah, well, it is okay. Do go. That's what I think Peter was getting to, was, you know, we don't want this story to incite any fear whatsoever.
Sure.
It's very, very rare. In my particular case, people had seen these sharks in the shallows, and on the beach where they observed these sharks in the shallows, they actually whistled out their swimmers, and they went into the water to scare these sharks out. So they were physically ramming them with these jet skis. So they're agitating these bull sharks, these two bull sharks in the water, and they happened to be coming my way, just wrong place, wrong time. That's what it was. It wasn't an aggressive attack. It wasn't an unexplained attack. It just shouldn't have happened, but it happened. And so I don't want my story to incite fear. Right. Peter and I both want to encourage people that if you love the ocean, to go into the ocean. And if it's not a question of the ocean, then let it be a story to incite you to face your fears.
But Peter,
and Frankie, if I can just get back to your question for a sec that you asked Nicole about, why her? I share her same feeling. I don't ask why me, and yet I consider myself to be extremely fortunate that Providence looked down on me and connected me with Nicole. It's been an honor to write her story. It truly is. I'm graced.
That's so sweet. That is so nice to hear.
He is a sweet guy.
Oh,
and a really, really good writer. I tell you, when he reads
that is an excellent book.
Oh,
yeah,
thank you,
he really grabs the reader. He really does.
Why don't you write my book, Peter?
Okay. Hey, Frankie, anytime.
You know, I just wanted to say that Peter, like, I know that you research stuff. What about, you know, how the landscape changed from the hotels, and they need their beaches, and so they take the habitats for these, you know, the sharks, and they're kind of at a loss because, like, I guess nature says, you know, come back to the same spot, and now it's gone. Where do they go? And so they're hanging around more than they used to.
Well, yeah, and it was part of a perfect storm that created this situation that was incredibly rare. The year before Nicole was there, storms had wiped out the beaches in Cancun, so the hotel operators and the tourist association got together, pooled their resources, and hired a firm to rebuild the beach. They went upland, and they started bringing huge quantities of sand down. What they didn't know was they were taking sand from the breeding grounds of the sharks. Bull sharks. So the bull shark would arrive home and find out, hey, home's gone. And as the experts told me, you do not want an annoyed bull shark, and that's what we have.
I'm going to stop you right there because I want to make sure we've got 2 minutes left. I want to make sure people know how to find the book.
Well, it's Shark Assault, An Amazing Story of Survival. It is available in bookstores. It's available in online, Amazon, Chapters, Indigo, Barnes & Noble.
Everywhere.
Everywhere, for Kindles and Kobos and Real Books and everything else.
First, let me say thank you to both of you for being on the show. And then second, Nicole, I just wanted to say, you know, while you're in the hospital, like, you know, death's door, you're typing out to the people who are so concerned about you, people that you don't know, I'm okay, don't worry about me. I just, you know, I'm going to have a surgery tomorrow to take off my arm, but everything will be good.
Crazy.
And you were worried that you didn't get back to their message in time to leave them a reply. Yeah. You crazy woman. You are.
just absolutely overwhelmed at the positive response from everyone and the support from everyone, that's from the strangers and everything. Yeah.
Really?
But you know what, Frankie, and you can hear it in Nicole, her sense of humor. How many people would be able to laugh at this? But she can, and that's tantamount to her personality.
Well, both of you, again, thank you so much. So happy that you're okay, Nicole. So happy, Peter, that you got to write her story, and I got to meet both of you. Just thrilled. And I just want to say, go out and get this book. It is fantastic. It's so well written, and you're going to want to read this. Read it and be encouraged. Be inspired. You know, to find your own strength if you need it in whatever area of your life you're going to need some strength. Take Nicole's, because she's sure got lots.
That's right. Thanks, Frankie.
Turn defeat into victory. You've been listening to Mission Unstoppable with Coach Frankie Picasso. See you next time, and always remember,
don't stop.